Hello, this is the commentary for Miss McIntosh, my darling. We're going to be able to cover chapters 12 and 13 because they are also short chapters. Chapter 14 is not, so let's see how, if I might have to break that one up. I have my mocha iced coffee and I'm ready to go. Oh, okay. Chapter 12. Character list: Vera Cartwheel and Miss McIntosh. Synopsis: a gorgeous chapter written from Vera's point of view with many memorable quotations. Here, Vera is amazed at the wonder and beauty all around her in the garden right before it is about to be shattered by a revelation about Miss McIntosh. Vera has categorized everything dreamlike to her mother and everything real to Miss McIntosh. What happens when that core belief and way of organizing the world comes crashing down? This is something universal. This is something universal to all people growing up, and in particular teenagers. So it's a good way to do this. It's like when you set up your belief system to be in one way and then it all falls apart. What do you do? So. Paragraph 1. Vera's imagination is not enough, and she's worried about missing out. If she missed her birthday party, she's been imagining her birthday party, a wedding between Mr. Spitzer and Miss McIntosh. If she missed her birthday party, would she also miss her wedding day? 2. Vera is up way past 10 at night. Horologer is a maker or seller of clocks and watches. Vera ruminates about time. There is a Big Ben alarm clock which Miss McIntosh calls Old Reliable. It did not repeat the hours, a day being gone when a day was gone, and the nights were no more extensive than the days, which were quick and short. An hour was only that hour. Only the well-off could afford illusions. And I really like that Miss Young puts this in the book. There were just such similar clocks in the bedrooms of servants who must awaken at a certain hour, for though time was an illusion, it was not the illusion of servants. Vera describes the clocks in the house, each clock having been stopped at a different hour over that period of time when my mother, retiring from the world, gone to bed by slow degrees, and not suddenly, as if she had hesitated a great deal, as if her decision had not been an easy one to make. Vera hears 3, then 4 clock bells, but it was still dark out. So I really do like, she emphasized that at different times. The rich can afford to dream. Only the rich can afford to live more than once. Poor people don't have that luxury. They can only afford to die once. The rich can afford to die twice. The poor can only afford to die once. And time can mean nothing to the well-off, because they could afford their dreams and illusions and hallucinations, whereas the servants have to run on a very strict timeline. They don't have leisure time or time for that, or time to think about anything else. So I thought that was a really good, I like that Young put that distinction there. 3. Vera wants to make human contact and can't wait until morning because she's afraid the morning should not bring the light, but that it should bring instead the darkness. She decides to go to Miss McIntosh, the details which must be told only through a veil of oblivion, which is itself a medium of memory. For there is no forgetfulness, even of the smallest thing. If it is hidden, it is revealed through its absence, the sense of the void. 4. Vera gets up and after sitting for a while goes outside, unafraid of anything. Nothing could have frightened me. This night of illumination and of innocence, when I felt my whole body being filled with the inestimable beauty and goodness of life, when I felt that life should answer the quest of the heart, I was free and my heart rejoicing. I had declared my difference from the dreamers and the dreams. 5. Aw, Crooked, not on the porch. Not on the porch. Why on the porch? No. Okay. Go do this someplace else. No. No. Go. you walk right back. Are you done? Are you okay? What was going on there? I thought it... Never mind, my cat was having an episode. Our stray cat. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, paragraph 5. Good thing these are short chapters. I have to remember to take my earbud out. That would be helpful before I drag my phone over the floor. Sorry for all the noise. Okay, 5. Vera wonders at the beauty, the unity of nature, the sublime harmony of this great enterprise. I felt that the stars in the heavens were real, not merely flickering lights, that there had been no cosmic joke, no conjurer's trick played upon us to make us believe that which could not be believed, that all does not fade at a touch, that all does not dissolve at a breath, that we are not as shadows. She embraces all her senses. We were the masterpieces of nature. So the theme of shadows, which I mentioned before, runs through the novel. The most famous one that I could that I remember and that I could look up information on was was Plato's work, The Allegory of the Cave or Plato's Cave. It is an allegory presented by the Greek philosopher Plato in his work Republic. The cave describes a group of people who have lived chained to the wall of a cave all their lives, facing the blank wall. The people watch shadows projected on the wall from objects passing in front of a fire behind them and give names to these shadows. The shadows are the prisoner's reality, but are not accurate representations of the real world. The shadows represent the fragment of reality that we can normally perceive through our senses, while the objects under the sun represent the true forms of objects that we can only perceive through reason. The philosopher is like a prisoner who is freed from the cave and comes to understand that the shadows on the wall are actually not the direct source of the images seen. A philosopher aims to understand and perceive the higher levels of reality. However, the other inmates of the cave do not even desire to leave their prison, for they know no better life. 6. Vera wonders at hair, eyelids, and eyelashes. While we are alive, we are privileged to close our own eyes and sleep. 7. Vera wonders about the lack of eyebrows on Mona Lisa. Miss McIntosh also does not have eyebrows. Mona Lisa is a half-length portrait by Leonardo da Vinci. It's in the Louvre. 8. Vera feels I was free, having no sense then of the imploring past, no sense of the power of the barren, the power of helpless and impotent things, nor the presentiment that what does not exist exists if we believe in it. 9. Vera thinks about happiness and sorrow. My happiness seemed boundless. I have wondered ever since, what is the influence of place? Are there places which seem to breed their special sorrow, that sorrow which colors the atmosphere often with the most elusive colors, like the memory of a nature already dead, that sorrow making the stones cry out, the leaves fall, making the trees bend in contorted shapes, as if under some imponderable weight of a more than human grief? Was it from me or from the world around me that sorrow came just when I was happiest? 10. Vera talks about the garden that was built by her mother's father for his blind wife. There were knotted growths like the malignants of abundance. Unthinking, my happiness self-evident, I stood in that sad, empty garden which my mother's methodical father long years ago had planted not for vision, not for point of view, nor for even a hidden perspective, but for the commingling of odorous blooms and the braille texture of flowers, whorls, petals, clusters, stamens, which should move under the moving visionary fingertips of his blind wife. Eleven. Vera describes her blind grandmother. She had never cared much for works of art. Only when she was blind, stone blind, had touched the stone surfaces, tracing the features which seemed to move. 12. Vera describes the garden in sensuous detail, then the last sentence ends with a premonition. Little could I have realized, for my heart had been filled with preternatural joy, that my first vision of the wonders and glories of this planet, glimmer and shine of flowers and leaves and birds' breasts, like multiple moons shining in ineffable light, the first vision would also be the last. Could I, 13. Could I have foreseen? Should I have turned back? Should I have gone on? 14. Vera realizes I should be surely struck between the eyes by the cold horror underlying all mortal things, and the beauty of that horror more beautiful than life. I should surely see, underlying the restricted routine of days and nights, another meaning than any I had seen, that nothing had been as it had seemed. Chanticleer is a male ensemble featured in fiction, Chanticleer and the Fox. I had unwittingly entertained that which was far more horrible because it was real, the flesh, the blood. 15. Vera thinks at length about her philosophical discovery, what a different perspective than there should be on all that was past, how it should be altered, how it should be transmogrified from when I saw, even in the candor of imperfect truth, the beautiful and horrifying disrelations of the spiritual, that there was no perfection, that there had always lain, just beyond the threshold of my secure vision, this other vision I had not been conscious of, and had perhaps not even dimly glimpsed, significances which had escaped me. Vera describes Miss McIntosh as being older and in ill health. She may someday leave Vera or retire, since Vera would not need her once she was grown or married. 16. Vera realizes that Miss McIntosh had given up everything to help Vera become a whole person at the age of 7. Miss McIntosh has a great silver thimble with the inscription Juliet, 1899. Julia Author and Maud Adams did a production of Romeo and Juliet in 1899. 17. Vera describes herself as a feral, wild child, and that Miss McIntosh had restored me to my senses when I had already seemingly lost them. Miss McIntosh had taught me a profound respect for who was real. 18. Vera describes her dreams and imagination with her mother. How should I at that early age have concluded that dreams are superior to the limitations of realities, that dreams are limitless, the thinnest walls existing between persons, that the sleeping life, that which I saw around me, was to be preferred infinitely to the cause and effect sequences of the waking life, which had its reason and its purpose. I had concluded that though the dreamer waked not again from sleep, though his breath should be stilled and should stir no feather in the air, yet death might be proved. The truth was only in the erroneous dream, the bridge between life and death. 19. Vera considers the difference that Miss McIntosh made in her. When nothing had happened, I was supposed to admit quite simply that nothing had happened. Neither I nor any other mortal was God, and omniscience had not been given to us, fortunately, so that we could not see everything. So we should all most certainly lose our minds and go stark, raving mad, screaming, tearing our hair. 20. Vera concludes Miss McIntosh was right, and there was no shadowy borderland where that exists which does not exist. Vera gives her explanation of God and imagination. It was God's murky business and not ours to tamper with or change, for God had suffered due to his erroneous creation and had quite frankly been filled with the greatest remorse ever since the day of the beginning, which was not too far different from the day of the end. Things had not turned out exactly as he had expected. Things had not developed. Things had gone somewhat awry, but that was not our affair, for God did not ask us to set up his trade, and God did not ask us to understand his traffic. We were very plain. We were intended for no high and mighty office, nothing which should set us apart from others. The wisest man was a fool in God's eyes, and there was a fool bound in the heart of every child. 21. Vera thinks about Miss McIntosh's ideas on God. Indeed, we were put here rather to endure ourselves than to test God, who required no judgment of ours, and not that we meddle in his remote business, and not that we unlock his deep mysteries, and not that we dream our lives away. 22. Vera thinks Miss McIntosh does not know anything about love. Love was not an inquiry beyond what meets the natural eye. Love was undoubtedly greatest love, which could see another's space in daylight and hear another's voice. There was no better test than harsh experience. 23. Vera describes Miss McIntosh as plain, old-fashioned, unvarnished spinster. She thought about time, stuff and nonsense, that perhaps there was a time which had not passed, that perhaps it was we who passed through time. It was her self-evident position that when something is gone, then there is no return. She gives Miss McIntosh's quintessential features of a Midwesterner. Her fortitude was this, to keep her feet solidly planted on earth which was not solid, never to let her head drift among the drifting clouds, to do her work of retribution for some old guilt not conceived by her, to make the best of matters and indulge in no self-pity. She could not soar upward on wings of words to heaven, for words were meaningless to her, and she was very stout-minded. And she was a middle brow, and she was a middle westerner, and she was middle-aged. She had only one face, one form, one heart, this old body which would not last a lifetime. And there's a couple of things that are in contrast. There is a time, I believe, where is it? So there is a time, I believe, for every character, I would have to go back. I would have to go back through and double check that kind of utters these words: when something is gone, it's gone. There's no return. And so every character kind of comes to that realization. And by the end of the book, by the last chapter, it's very clear that that's the position that Young is trying to make, position that she's taken. And I think Miss McIntosh is the only one, and this is a good way to where Miss McIntosh, Young described Miss McIntosh as the center of a wheel, and all the characters were spokes that went out from her. There's several ways you can look at it. I remember finding another passage, maybe it was this one, but this is a good way of putting it to where she's a Middle Westerner. She's the center of that wheel, and she has only one face, one form, and one heart, and a body that will maybe not even last this lifetime and will not last past it. So that makes it very clear what Young was saying. Miss McIntosh is the center of that wheel, because the characters that come off of that center all believe in two hearts, two souls, all of them say it like Madge was saying it about it. She has two faces, two hearts. Esther at the end will say it. Mr. Spitzer, you'll get a whole thing about him saying it. And he died, and like Catherine, who, and did Catherine talk about it? I'd have to look back at Catherine. I'm not sure if she said it, but I believe she did at some point, but it was a little bit, I think, more vague. Or she recognized it in other, and I know she definitely, like, as far as Mr. Spitzer, recognized it in others that they had a double life. So yeah, I think that's the core difference between Miss McIntosh and all the other characters, is Miss McIntosh believes in the one, and the rest of the characters believe in this type of dualism. There's two. Interesting. That really brought that up, you know, onto a point there. Last paragraph. Vera notices a stark difference between Miss McIntosh and Madge. Miss McIntosh did not have, two faces, one to turn toward the world, one to turn toward heaven. So it's that dualism that you think there's one. That's kind of interesting. It's that dualism where you think there's one life that you're going to live here. And I've heard this from people who are very religious, that there's one life that you're going to live here on earth, and then there's a completely different life that you're going to live with in heaven. That you're going to live in heaven. And I'm just like, and so for me personally, I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I just don't. How would you? I can understand the appeal of it. You're saying, well, from their point of view, maybe. Again, I'm putting words in their mouths, but the way it looks is that I could understand if you had a less than happy life, if you had some kind of perceived disability, if things didn't go right in this life, well, don't worry, there's another life, and in that life, all your dreams will come true, everything will be perfect. And so I think Young outright rejects that idea, and she does it through the form of Miss McIntosh. Like, yeah, you can use all of this to live a good life, to have good character, but no, this is the only life you live. There's only one body here, and that's it. There is no other life. So very interesting. Miss McIntosh did not understand these necessary dualities of darkness and light, which others seem to live by, the self-contradictions. So Miss McIntosh believed that way, and she understands that other people live differently, looking at those two sides. But she doesn't. And so that's so funny for them, for Young to make this comparison that there's this one life you need to live two. Oh, the mailman's here. And that it's that others have this necessary duality in them. All right, chapter 13. Hold on, I'm gonna get my mail. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Chapter 13, character list. Vera Cartwheel, Catherine Cartwheel, and Mr. Spitzer. Synopsis. Vera starts the chapter strongly foreshadowing the profound change she will undergo after learning Miss McIntosh's secret. Catherine is imagining a garden party and then argues with Mr. Spitzer that the ear and heart are dead. The world is filled with silence, and that is part of the reason she's taken to her bed. Huh. I just thought of something. I literally just thought of something. So you have this... Oh my gosh. Okay, so you have Young through Miss McIntosh living in the real world. This is real. You have other people believing in this duality in the world of there's this world and then there's the next world. There's this world which may be imperfect, but there's a next world which will fix all of that. So this is a definite critique on religion. And Young through Vera describes that she has removed herself from the world, and then she lives in the dreams of illusions, hallucinations. So, if you follow the religious implications of this, which is the Bible's very heavily in here. So, if you follow the religious implications, there's the real world that people have to live in, mainly the poor have to live and just survive. There's the other world people can afford to have. Or live two lives, one in this world, and then, okay, we die and get a perfect world, the next one, that's fine. And so Catherine, if you follow that line of reasoning, so Catherine, to me, kind of could represent people who have removed themselves in the world for a spiritual reason, like monks in monasteries. They remove themselves from the world. The world is too corrupted. They can't live in the world because it's too corrupted. They can't survive. It's dead. There's nothing there. The ear and the heart are dead, as Catherine says. And so they just remove themselves from this corrupt world to wait for the better life that comes after this one. Huh. Kind of fits. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think? Okay, paragraph 1. Vera remembers what happened on her 14th birthday. Farewell to Miss McIntosh, for though I should surely see her again, yet she should have so greatly changed in my eyes that she might have been to all intents and purposes a perfect stranger I had lived with for 7 years without so much as realizing the ominous fact. Who had she been? Who was she? 2. Vera talks about my ignorance had been perhaps my salvation. Then she describes a traveler who crosses Lake Constance in sub-zero weather, when the lake never truly freezes over. When the traveler realizes he's done the impossible, he drops dead from shock. Lake Constance is made up of 3 bodies of water on the Rhine at the foot of the Alps. Everything, as I looked back, would be different from what it had been. The simplest gesture having a different meaning, the smallest word being weighted with a different message. Never again should I see Miss McIntosh. Vera describes Miss McIntosh, and the parallel could be between children seeing their parents for the first time, that they are not the all-knowing, perfect beings that they have grown up to believe. 3. Vera considers Miss McIntosh, in spite of some few oddities which were her own, so very average and unassuming, the one person who had not veered suddenly before my eyes, whose ways had appeared fixed like the North Star and unchanging, who had been neither the unstable voyage nor the voyager. Vera believes her mother feigned death because it was an enchantment greater than fleeting existence. While McIntosh was the one person who was not chimerical and fading, who was by no means the phantom filled with color, with sonority, with delusive vision of what was not, the one person who was not the dreamer and the mistaken, egregious dream displacing life. When Vera says farewell to all these things she thought she knew, and farewell to the unity of awakening life, the superficial consciousness which omits so many hidden things. Huh. That gives food for thought for what I commented on last time. Four, Vera continues, farewell to the dream of the past, for it should be laid bare like a corpse before my eyes, and I should see that there is nothing which does not bear the capacity to surprise and shock us with the absence of all those qualities and properties we had supposed, perhaps too with the presences of others. Five, Vera looks at the garden again through her mother's eyes, for life was only this, a perpetual garden party, omitting the tragic spirit, even the dead hostess. Dr. Galen may refer to Elias Galenus, a Greek physician, surgeon, philosopher. Dr. Harvey may refer to William Harvey, the first known physician to describe in detail the human circulatory system. Oliver Goldsmith was a novelist, playwright, and poet. Ben Jonson was a playwright and poet. And yes, I did look at their poems, but they're, I'd have to go back and see if, you know, like a treasure hunt, which I am going to read the book again, so don't worry. I can go through and just pick out poets now this time instead of novelists, and see if she left a breadcrumb like she did the other, as to which poem she was referring to with Sir Walter Raleigh. Six, Vera gives in to the dream and describes in lush details an elaborate garden party. Chrysocated means to sparkle. A somnambulist is a person who walks in their sleep. Supernumerary is an excess of the normal number. In this garden, as my mother would always say, the ear is dead. Seven, Catherine Vera's mother elaborates while talking to Mr. Spitzer on the garden of the death that the ear was dead. The ear was dead. For so many years, more than either he or she could realize, she had not dared go out of doors, for she could not endure the silence unbroken by the sound, and she feared the silence. She marveled that Mr. Spitzer argued law cases in dusty courtrooms, that he said yea and nay, that he made important decisions. For who could hear him in all this world, and who had heard his voice for meaningless years, and what difference had his legal practice made? The ear was dead. She would lovingly sum up his case, and urged also that he need not trouble himself to attempt now even a brief reply to her regrets, for there was no sound, not even the creaking of starlight. I'll put it in the last book in the series, Marguerite Young. There's a collection of essays that were reprinted, and one of them is she worked with the deaf, and she wrote an article, an essay about the deaf and their world. So that's one reason I think the deaf feature prominently in the book as well. Eight, Catherine wonders if Mr. Spitzer compares it to the silence of the grave and the dead. When he walked through the Garden of the Deaf, taking the shortcut to the sea road, which was sometimes lost in booming surf, did it not give him pause, the dead ear? For was not his heart silent too, like the dead ear? Nine, Mr. Spitzer disagrees. Mr. Spitzer, however, would sometimes insist on speaking. Even though he should not, he believed, be heard. 10. Mr. Spitzer talks about a subdued roaring in his right ear. He was diagnosed by his dead brother's dead physician, who had assured him did not come from this world. Last paragraph, Catherine argues with Mr. Spitzer even after he's left her. The ear was dead, and the sound was fled from the universe. All the world which entered through the ear, reason and imagination and human argument, it was also closed and soundless, and there was not a sound to be heard. I think it's all this reason, it sounds like all this reason, human reason and imagination and argument, like it seems to say like humans are doing all this, like all of this sound, all of this stuff, but yet no one can hear it, and especially no one outside of human beings can hear it. It's just like right now I have the birds twittering. I don't know what they're saying. They're making all this sound, and it sounds pleasant to me, but it's incomprehensible to me. And so it seems like she's saying the same thing about humans. You're making all this sound, but there's nobody going to understand you. Outside of you that's going to understand you. Catherine explains that this is why Mr. Spitzer's music was the silence. One should see his lover's face, but never hear his voice speaking farewell. And the music of the silence plays very prominently. I can't even begin to I don't even begin to like consider the implications of it. It's a theme that is very prominent. It takes up a big space of the book because it's Mr. Spitzer's theme, and Mr. Spitzer's theme takes up a big part of the book. But we shall get to that. Okay, chapter 14 is really long, and we're talking more about, who is in this chapter? Go back to my handy dandy character list. Okay, so we're not there yet. 14, we're going to go on to we're going to continue with Catherine and Mr. Spitzer. And let's see. It's a long chapter, but I may be able to get to it in one episode. All right. I thought it would be a lot hotter outside today, but it looks like a storm's rolling in, so maybe not. It's cool on the porch right now, so... Yeah. My good time to sit out here and continue working on this. So I will be going back over chapter 14 and should be back tomorrow to continue. I hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening. Bye.